We did observe.
Cousin Armeryl, how far brought you High Hereford on his way?
I brought High Hereford, if you call him so, but to the next highway, and there I left him.
And say, what store of parting tears were shed?
Faith, none of me. Except the northeast wind, which then blew bitterly against our faces, awake the sleeping room, and so by chance did grace our hollow parting with a tear.
What said our cousin when you parted with him?
Farewell, and for my heart disdained that my tongue should so profane the word that taught me craft to counterfeit oppression of such grief that word seemed buried in my sorrow's grave. Mary, would the word farewell have lengthened hours and added years to his short banishment? He should have had a volume of farewells. But since it would not, he had none of me.
He is our cousin, cousin. But his doubt when time shall call him home from banishment whether our kinsmen come to see his friends. Ourself and Busey, Bagot here and Green, observed his courtship to the common people. How he did seem to dive into their hearts with humble and familiar courtesy. What reverence he did throw away on slaves, wooing poor craftsmen with the craft of smiles and patient underbearing of his fortune, as 'twere to banish their effects with him. Off goes his bonnet to an oyster wench. A brace of draymen bid God speed him well, and had the tribute of his supple knee with thanks, my countrymen, my loving friends, as were our England in reversion his, and he our subjects next degree in hope.
Well, he is gone, and with him go these thoughts. Now for the rebels which stand out in Ireland. Expedient manage must be made, my liege, ere further leisure yield them further means for their advantage, and your highness's law.
We will ourself in person to this war, and for our coffers with too great a court and liberal largesse are grown somewhat light, we are enforced to farm our royal realm. The revenue whereof shall furnish us for our affairs in hand. If that comes short, our substitutes at home shall have blank charters, whereto, when they shall know what men are rich, they shall subscribe them for large sums of gold, and send them after to supply our wants. For we will make for Ireland presently. Busey, what news?
Oh, Joan of Gaunt is grievous sick, my lord. Suddenly taken, and hath sent post-haste to entreat your majesty to visit him.
Where lies he?
At Ely House.
Now put it God in his physician's mind to help him to his grave immediately. The lining of his coffers shall make coats to deck our soldiers for these Irish wars. Come, gentlemen, let's all go visit him. Pray God we may make haste and come too late.
Will the king come that I may breathe my last and wholesome counsel to his unstayed youth?
Vex not yourself, nor strive not with your breath. For all in vain comes counsel to his ear.
Oh, but they say the tongues of dying men enforce attention like deep harmony. Where words are scarce, they are seldom spent in vain, for they breathe truth that breathe their words in pain. He that no more must say is listened to more than they with whom youth and ease have taught to gloss. More are men's ends marked than their lives before. The setting sun and music at the close, at the last taste of sweets as sweet as last, writ in remembrance more than things long past. Though Richard my life's counsel would not hear, my death's sad tale may yet undeaf his ear.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It is stopped with other flattering sounds, as praises of his state. Then there are fond lascivious meters, to whose venom sound the open ear of youth doth always listen, who report of fashions in proud Italy, whose manners still our tardy, apish nation limps after in base imitation. Where doth the world thrust forth a vanity, so it be new, there's no respect how vile that is not quickly buzzed into his ears. Then all too late comes counsel to be heard. Where will doth mutiny with wit's regard. Direct not him whose way himself will choose. 'Tis breath thou lack'st, and that breath wilt thou lose.
Methinks I am a prophet new inspired, and thus expiring do foretell of him. His rash, fierce blaze of riot cannot last, for violent fires soon burn out themselves. Small showers last long, but sudden storms are short. He tires betimes, that spurs too fast betimes. With eager feeding, food doth choke the feeder. Light vanity, insatiate cormorant, consuming mean, soon preys upon itself. This royal throne of kings, this sceptered isle, this earth of majesty, this seat of Mars, this other Eden, demi-paradise, this fortress built by nature for herself, against infection and the hand of war, this happy breed of men, this little world, this precious stone set in the silver sea, which serves it in the office of a wall, or as a moat defensive to a house, against the envy of less happier lands. This blessed plot, this earth, this realm, this England, this nurse, this teeming womb of royal kings, feared by their breed and famous by their birth, renowned for their deeds as far from home, for Christian service and true chivalry, as is the sepulchre in stubborn Jewry of the world's ransom. Blessed Mary's son, this land of such dear souls, this dear, dear land, dearer for her reputation throughout the world, is now leased out. I die pronouncing it! Like to a tenement or pelting farm. England, bound in with the triumphant sea, whose rocky shore beats back the envious siege of watery Neptune, is now bound in with shame, with inky blots and rotten parchment bonds. That England that was wont to conquer others hath made a shameful conquest of itself. Would the scandal vanish with my life? How happy then were my ears.
The king is come. Deal mildly with his youth, for young coats being rage do rage the more.
How fares our noble uncle Lancaster?
What comfort, man? How is it with aged Gaunt?
Oh, how that name befits my composition. Old Gaunt indeed, and Gaunt in being old. Within me grief hath kept a tedious fast. And who abstains from meat that is not Gaunt? For sleeping England long time have I watched. Watching breeds leanness. Leanness is all Gaunt. The pleasure that some fathers feed upon is my strict fast. I mean my children's looks, and therein fasting. Hast thou made me Gaunt? Gaunt am I for the grave. Gaunt as a grave, whose hollow womb inherits naught but bones.
Can sick men play so nicely with their names?
No! Misery makes sport to mock itself. Since thou dost seek to kill my name in me, I mock my name, great king, to flatter thee.
Should dying men flatter with those that live?
No, no. Men living flatter those that die.
Thou, now a dying, say'st thou flatter'st me?
No, no, thou diest, though I the sicker be.
I am in health, I breathe and see thee ill.
Now, he that made me knows I see thee ill. Ill in myself to see, and in thee seeing ill. Thy deathbed is no lesser than thy land, wherein thou liest in reputation sick. And thou, too careless patient as thou art, committest thy anointed body to the cure of those physicians that first wounded thee. A thousand flatterers sit within thy crown, whose compass is no bigger than thy head. And yet, encaged in so small a verge, the waste is no whit lesser than thy land. Oh, had thy grandsire with a prophet's eye seen how his son's son should destroy his sons, from forth thy reach he would have laid thy shame, deposing thee before thou wert possessed, which art possessed now to depose thyself. Why, cousin, wert thou regent of the world, it were a shame to let this land by lease. But for thy world, enjoying but this land, is it not more than shame to shame it so? Landlord of England, art thou now not king? Thy state of law is bondslave to the law, and...
And thou a lunatic, lean-witted fool, presuming on an argue's privilege, darest with thy frozen admonition make pale our cheek, chasing the royal blood with fury from his native residence. Now, by my seat's right royal majesty, wert thou not brother to great Edward's son, this tongue that runs so roundly in thy head should run thy head from thy unreverent shoulders.
No, spare me not, my brother Edward's son, for that I was his father Edward's son. That blood already, like the pelican, hast thou tapped out and drunkenly caroused. My brother Gloucester, plain, well-meaning soul, whom fair befall in heaven amongst happy souls, may be a precedent and witness good that thou respectest not spilling Edward's blood. Join with the present sickness that I have, and thy unkindness be like crooked age to crop at once too long withered flower. Live in thy shame, but die not shame with these. These words hereafter thy tormentors be. Convey me to my bed, and then to my grave. Love they to live that love and humor have.
And let them die that age and sullens have, for both hast thou, and both become the grave.
I do beseech your majesty, impute his words to wayward sickliness and age in him. He loves you on my life and holds you dear as Harry, Duke of Hereford, were he here.
Right, you say true. As Hereford's love, so his. As theirs, so mine, and all be as it is.
My lord, old Gaunt commends him to your majesty.
What says he?
Nay, nothing. All is said. His tongue is now a stringless instrument. Words, life, and all, old Lancaster hath spent.
Be York the next that must be bankrupt, so. Death be poor, it ends a mortal woe.
The ripest fruit first falls, and so doth he. His time is spent, our pilgrimage must be. So much for that. Now for our Irish wars. We must supplant those rough, rug-headed kerns which live like venom, where no venom else but only they have privilege to live. And, for these great affairs do ask some charge, toward our assistance we do seize to us the plate, coin, revenues, and movables whereof our uncle Gaunt did stand possessed.
How long shall I be patient? Oh, how long shall tender duty make me suffer wrong? And not Gloucester's death, nor Hereford's banishment, nor Gaunt's rebukes, nor England's private wrongs, nor the prevention of poor Bolingbroke about his marriage, nor my own disgrace have ever made me sour my patient cheek, or bend one wrinkle on my sovereign's face. I am the last of noble Edward's sons, of whom thy father Richard was the first. In war was never lion rage more fierce. In peace was never gentle lamb more mild than was that young and princely gentleman. His face thou hast, for even so looked he, accomplished with the number of thy hours. But when he frowned, it was against the French, not against his friends. His noble hand did win what he did spend, and spent not that which his triumphant father's hand had won. His hands were guilty of no kindred's blood, but bloody with the enemies of his kin. Oh, Richard, York is too far gone with grief or else he never would confer between.
Why, Uncle, what's the matter?
Oh, my liege! Pardon me, if you please, if not, I please not to be pardoned, am content with all. Seek you to seize and gripe into your hands the royalties and rights of banished Hereford. Is not Gaunt dead, and doth not Hereford live? Was not Gaunt just, and is not Harry true? Did not the one deserve to have an heir? Is not his heir a well-deserving son? You take Hereford's rights away, and take from time his charters and his customary rights. Let not tomorrow then ensure today. Be not thyself, for how art thou a king but by first sequence and succession? Now, for God, God forbid I say true. If you do wrongfully seize Hereford's rights, call in the letters patent that he hath by his attorneys general to sue his livery and deny his offered homage. You pluck 1,000 dangers on your head. You lose 1,000 well-disposed hearts, and prick my tender patience to those thoughts which honor and allegiance cannot think.
Think what you will. We seize into our hands his plate, his goods, his money, and his lands.
I'll not be by the while, my liege. Farewell. What will ensue thereof, there's none can tell. But by bad courses may be understood that their events can never fall out good.
Go, Bussy, to the Earl of Wiltshire straight. Bid him repair to us to Ely House to see this business. Tomorrow next we will for Ireland, and his time, I trow. And we create an absence of ourself our Uncle York, Lord Governor of England. For he is just and always loved us well. Come on, our queen. Tomorrow must we part. Be merry, for our time of stay is short.
Well, lords, the Duke of Lancaster is dead.
And living too, for now his son is Duke.
Barely in title, not in revenue.
Richly in both, if justice had her right.
My heart is great, but it must break with silence, ere it be disburdened with a liberal tongue.
Nay, speak thy mind, and let him ne'er speak more that speaks thy words again to do thee harm.
Tends that thou speak to the Duke of Hereford. If it be so, out with it, boldly man. Quick is mine ear to hear of goods towards him.
No good at all that I can do for him, unless you call it good to pity him, bereft and gelded of his patrimony.
Now, afore God, 'tis shame such wrongs are born in him, a royal prince, and many more of noble blood in this declining land. The king is not himself, but basely led by flatterers, and what they will inform merely in hate, gainst any of us all, that will the king severely prosecute gainst us. Our lives, our children, and our heirs.
The commons hath he pilled with grievous taxes and quite lost their hearts. The nobles hath he fined for ancient quarrels and quite lost their hearts.
And daily new exactions are devised, as blanks, benevolences, and I wot not what. But what, O God's name, doth become of this?
Wars have not wasted it, for ward he hath not, but basely yielded upon compromise that which his ancestors achieved with blows. More hath he spent in peace than they in wars.
The Earl of Wiltshire hath the realm in farm.
The king's grown bankrupt, like a broken man.
Reproach and dissolution hangeth over him.
He hath no money for these Irish wars, his burden is taxation notwithstanding, but by the robbing of the banished duke.
His noble kinsman, most degenerate king. But, lords, we hear this fearful tempest sing, yet seek no shelter to avoid the storm. We see the wind sit sore upon our sails, and yet we strike not, but securely perish.
And we see the very wrack that we must suffer, and unavoided is the danger now. For suffering so is the causes of our wrack.
Not so. Even through the hollow eyes of death, I spy life peering. But I dare not say how near the tidings of our comfort is.
Nay. Let us share thy thoughts as thou dost ours.
Be confident to speak, Northumberland. We three are but thyself, and speaking so, thy words are but as thoughts. Therefore be bold.
And thus, I have from Port Leblanc, a bay in Brittany, received intelligence that Harry Duke of Hereford, Randall Lord Cobham, but late broke from the Duke of Exeter, his brother, Archbishop late of Canterbury, Sir Thomas Erpingham, Sir John Ramsden, Sir John Norbury, Sir Robert Waterton and Francis Coynt, all these well furnished by the Duke of Bretagne, with 8 tall ships, 3,000 men of war, are making hither with all due expedience, and shortly mean to touch our northern shore. Perhaps they had ere this, but that they stay the first departing of the king for Ireland. If then we shall shake off our slavish yoke, imp out our drooping country's broken wing, redeem from broken palm the blemished crown, wipe off the dust that hides our scepter's guilt and make High Majesty look like itself. Away with me in post to Ravensburg. But if you faint, as fearing to do so, stay and be secret, and myself will go.
To horse, urge doubts to them that fear.
Hold out my horse, and I will first be there.
Madam, your majesty is too much sad. You promised when you parted with the king to lay aside life-harming heaviness and entertain a cheerful disposition.
To please the king I did. To please myself I cannot do it. Yet I know no cause why I should welcome such a guest as grief, save bidding farewell to so sweet a guest as my sweet Richard. Yet again, methinks, some unborn sorrow, ripe in fortune's womb, is coming towards me, and my inward soul with nothing trembles. At some thing it grieves more than with parting from my lord the king.
Each substance of a grief hath 20 shadows, which shows like grief itself, but are not so. For sorrow's eye, glazed with blinding tears, divides one thing entire to many objects, like perspectives, which rightly gazed upon show nothing but confusion. Eye to eye distinguished form. So your sweet majesty, looking awry upon your lord's departure, finds shapes of grief more than himself to wail, which, looked on as it is not but shadows of what it is not. Then, thrice gracious queen, more than your lord's departure, weep not. More's not seen. Or if it be, 'tis with false sorrow's eye, which were things true, weeps things imaginary.
It may be so, but yet my inward soul persuades me it is otherwise. Howe'er it be, I cannot but be sad. So heavy sad is, though in thinking on no thought I think, makes me with heavy nothing faint and shrink.
'Tis nothing but conceit, most gracious lady.
'Tis nothing less. Conceit is still derived from some forefather grief. Mine is not so, for nothing hath begot my something grief, or something hath the nothing that I grieve. 'Tis in reversion that I do possess, but what it is that is not yet known, what I cannot name. 'Tis nameless woe, I wot.
God save your majesty, and well met, gentlemen. I hope the king is not yet shipped for Ireland.
Why hopest thou so? 'Tis better hope he is, for his designs crave haste. His haste, good hope. Then wherefore dost thou hope he is not shipped?
Oh, that he, our hope, might have retired his power and driven into despair an enemy's hope, who strongly hath set footing in this land. The banished Bolingbroke repeals himself, and with uplifted arms is safe arrived at Ravensburg.
Now God in heaven forbid!
Ah, madam, 'tis too true, and that is worse. The Lord Northumberland, his son young Henry Percy, the lords of Ross, Beaumont, and Willoughby, with all their powerful friends, are fled to him.
Why have you not proclaimed Northumberland and all the rest of the revolted faction traitors?
We have, whereupon the Earl of Worcester hath broke his staff, resigned his stewardship, and all the household servants fled with him to Bolingbroke.
So, Green, thou art the midwife to my woe, and Bolingbroke my sorrow's dismal heir. Now hath my soul brought forth her prodigy, and I, a gasping, new-delivered mother, have woe to woe, sorrow to sorrow joined.
Despair not, madam.
Who shall hinder me? I will despair and be at enmity with cousining hope. He is a flatterer, a parasite, a keeper back of death, who gently would dissolve the bands of life which false hope lingers in extremity.
Oh, here comes the Duke of York.
With signs of war about his aged neck. Oh, full of careful business are his looks. Uncle, for God's sake, speak comfortable words.
Should I do so, I should belie my thoughts. Comforts in heaven, and we are on the earth, where nothing lives but crosses, cares, and grief. Your husband he is gone to save far off, whilst others come to make him lose at home. Here am I left to underprop his land, who weak with age cannot support myself. Now comes the sick hour that his servant made. Now shall he try his friends that flattered him.
My lord, your son was gone before I came.
He was? Why? So, go, all which way it will. The nobles, they are fled. The commons, they are cold. And will I fear revolt on Hereford's side? Sirrah, get thee to Plashy, to my sister Gloucester. Bid her send me presently 1,000 pounds. Hold, take a ring.
My lord, I forgot to tell your lordship. Today, as I came by, I called there. But I shall grieve you to report the rest.
What is it, knave?
An hour before I came, the Duchess died.
God for his mercy. What a tide of woes comes rushing on this woeful land at once. I know not what to do. I would to God so my untruth had not provoked him to it. The king had cut off my head with my brothers. What? Are there no post dispatch for Ireland? How should we do for money in these wars? Come, sister, queen, I would say, pray pardon me. Go, fellow, get thee home, provide some carts, and bring away the armor that is there. Gentlemen, will you go muster men, if I know how or which way to order these affairs? Thus thrust disorderly into my hands. Never believe me. Ah, both are my kinsmen. The one is my sovereign, whom both my oath and duty bids defend. The other again is my kinsman, whom the king hath wronged, whom conscience and my kindred bids to right. Well, somewhat we must do. Come, my queen, I'll dispose of you. Gentlemen, go muster up your men, and meet me presently at Berkeley Castle. I should to Plashy too, but time will not permit. All is uneven, and everything is left at 6 and 7.
The wind sits fair for news to go to Ireland, but none returns. For us to levy power proportionable to the enemy is all impossible.
Besides, our nearness to the king in love is near the hate of those love not the king.
And that's the wavering commons. For their love lies in their purses, and whoso empties them by so much fills their hearts with deadly hate.
Wherein the king stands generally condemned.
If judgment lie in them, then so do we, because we ever have been near to the king.
Well, I'll for refuge straight to Bristol Castle. The Earl of Wiltshire is already there.
Thither will I with you. For little office will the hateful commons perform for us, except like curs to tear us all to pieces. Will you go along with us?
No. I will to Ireland, to his majesty. Farewell. If heart's presages be not vain, we three here part, that ne'er shall meet again.
That says York thrives to beat back Bolingbroke.
Alas, poor Duke, the task he undertakes is numbering sands and drinking oceans dry. Where one on his side fights, thousands will fly. Farewell at once, for all, and ever.
Well, we may meet again.
I fear me. Never.
How far is it, my lord, to Berkeley now?
Believe me, noble lord, I am a stranger here in Gloucestershire. These high, wild hills and rough, uneven ways draw out our miles and make them wearisome. But yet your fair discourse hath been as sugar, making the hard way sweet and delectable. But I bethink me what a weary way from Ravensburg to Cotswold will be found in Ross and Willoughby, wanting your company, which, I protest, hath very much beguiled the tediousness and process of my travel. But theirs is sweetened with the hope to have the present benefit which I possess, and hope to joy is little less in joy than hope enjoyed. By this the weary lords shall make their way seem short, as mine hath done by sight of what I have, your noble company.
Of much less value is my company than your good words. But who comes here?
Oh, it is my son, young Harry Percy, sent from my brother Worcester, whencesoever. Harry, how fares your uncle?
I had thought, my lord, to have learned his health from you.
Why, is he not with the queen?
No, my good lord. He hath forsook the court, broken his staff of office, and dispersed the household of the king.
What was his reason? He was not so resolved when we last spake together.
Because your lordship was proclaimed traitor. But he, my lord, has gone to Ravensburg to offer service to the Duke of Hereford, and sent me over to Berkeley to discover what power the Duke of York had levied there, then with direction to repair to Ravensburg.
Have you forgot the Duke of Hereford, boy?
No, my good lord, for that is not forgot which ne'er I did remember. To my knowledge, I never in my life did look on him.
Then learn to know him now. This is the Duke.
My gracious lord, I tender you my service, such as it is, being tender, raw, and young, which elder days shall ripen and confirm to more approved service and desert.
I thank thee, gentle Percy, and be sure I count myself in nothing else so happy as in a soul remembering my good friends. And as my fortune ripens with thy love, it shall be still thy true love's recompense. My heart this covenant makes, my hand thus seals it.
How far is it to Berkeley? And what stir keeps good old York there with his men of war?
There stands the castle, by yon tuft of trees, manned with 300 men, as I have heard, and in it are the lords of York, Berkeley, and Seymour, none else of name and noble estimate.
Here come the lords of Ross and Willoughby, bloody with spurring, fiery red with haste.
Welcome, my lords. I wot your love pursues a banished traitor. All my treasury is yet unfelt, thanks which more enriched shall be your love and labor's recompense.
Your presence makes us rich, most noble lord.
And far surmounts our labor to attain it.
Evermore thanks the exchequer of the poor, which, till my infant fortune comes to years, stands for my bounty. But who comes here?
It is my lord of Berkeley, as I guess.
My lord of Hereford, my message is to you.
My lord, my answer is to Lancaster. And I am come to seek that name in England, and I must find that title in your tongue before I make reply to aught you say.
Mistake me not, my lord, 'tis not my meaning. To raise one title of your honor out, to you, my lord, I come, what lord you will, from the most gracious regent of this land, the Duke of York, to know what pricks you on, to take advantage of the absent time, and fright our native peace with self-borne arms.
I shall not need transport my words by you. Here comes his grace in person, my noble uncle.
Ah, show me thy humble heart and not thy knee, whose duty is deceivable and false.
My gracious uncle.
Tut, tut, grace me no grace. Not uncle me, no uncle. I am no traitor's uncle, and that word grace in an ungracious mouth is but profane. Why have those banished and forbidden legs dared once to touch a dust of England's ground? But then more, why? Why have they dared to march so many miles upon her peaceful bosom, frighting her pale-faced villagers with war and ostentation of despised arms? Comest thou because the anointed king is hence? Why, foolish boy, the king is left behind, and in my loyal bosom lies his power. Were I but now the lord of such hot youth, as when brave Gaunt thy father and myself rescued the Black Prince, that young Mars of men, and fought the ranks of many thousand French. Oh then, how quickly should this arm of mine, now prisoner to the palsy, chastise thee, and minister correction to thy fault.
My gracious uncle, let me know my fault. On what condition stands it, and wherein?
Even in condition of the worst degree, in gross rebellion and detested treason. Thou art a banished man, and here art come before the expiration of thy time, in braving arms against thy sovereign.
As I was banished Hereford. But as I come for Lancaster. And noble uncle, I beseech your grace, look on my wrongs with an indifferent eye. You are my father, for methinks I see in you old Gaunt alive. Oh, then, my father, will you permit that I shall stand condemned a wandering vagabond? My rights and royalties plucked from my arms perforce and given away to upstart unthrifts? Wherefore was I born? If that my cousin king be king of England, it must be granted, I am Duke of Lancaster. You have a son, Omero, my noble kinsman. Had you first died, and he thus be trod down, he should have found his uncle Gaunt a father, to rouse his wrongs and chase them to the bay. I am denied to sue my livery here. And yet my letters patent give me leave. My father's goods all distrained and sold, and these and all are all a misemployed. What would you have me do? I am a subject and challenged all. Attorneys are denied me. And therefore, personally, I lay my claim to my inheritance of free descent.
The noble duke hath been too much abused.
He stands your grace upon to do him right.
Basemen by his endowments are made great.
My lords of England, let me tell you this. I have had feelings of my cousin's wrongs and labored all I could to do him right. But in this kind to come, in braving arms, be his own carver and cut out his way to find out right with wrong. It may not be. And you that do abet him in this kind, cherish rebellion and are rebels all.
The noble duke hath sworn his coming is but for his own, and for the right of that we have all strongly sworn to give him aid. And let him ne'er see joy that breaks that oath.
Well, I see the issue of these arms. I cannot mend it. I must needs confess, because my power is weak and all ill left. But if I could, by him that gave me life, I would attach you all and make you stoop unto the sovereign mercy of the king. Since I cannot, be it known to you, I do remain as neuter. So, fare you well, unless you please, to enter in the castle and there repose you for this night.
An offer, uncle, that we will accept. But we must win your grace to go with us to Bristol Castle, which they say is held by Boosey, Bagot, and their accomplices, the caterpillars of the Commonwealth, which I have sworn to weed and pluck away.
It may be I will go with you, but yet I'll pause, for I am loath to break our country's laws. Not friends nor foes, to me welcome you are. Ah, things past redress are now with me past care.